Mr. Speaker, I have come to appreciate a very simple fact in my very young life in politics. And that is, the people who have elected me, the people of Meeker North, to whom I remain so grateful, make very little distinction between an MP in government and an MP on the opposition benches. And I do not blame them for this, because perhaps it is based on an expectation that regardless of the government of the day, there is an understanding that the government should endeavor to serve the interests of all St. Lucians, regardless of their political affiliation. Mr. Speaker, I beg your indulgence as I remind myself and, of course, the people of Meeker North that as I engaged with them during the campaign and I asked for their support, I took to them a 14-point plan for Meeker North. And bear with me, please, as I reiterate the components of that plan. I will move to make the document of the House if need be. Develop and improve sporting facilities in Meeker North. Dialogue with the sports councils to reorganize, strengthen, and link clubs throughout the constituency. Establish a Meeker North Development Foundation. Develop Meeker North as a premier cultural tourism site. Develop the first public-private sector e-park for St. Lucia in Meeker North. Build human capital through the development of technological entrepreneurs. Initiate and implement a program of sustainable revenue for farmers and fishermen. Create lifelong educational programs for women with a special emphasis on single-parent families. Establish a state-of-the-art health and wellness center. Work with stakeholders to ensure the establishment of a fisherman's cooperative. Rehabilitate the agricultural, cedar, and community roads. Install appropriate infrastructure to facilitate housing development. Develop a land reform and usage program. And institute a pilot mandatory early childhood education program. Mr. Speaker, I have reiterated the points, the 14-point plan that I took to the people of Meeker North in asking for their support, because I am well aware that I'll be judged by those 14 points and my ability to implement them, albeit that I sit on the opposition benches. So as I peruse the budget statement for the financial year 2012-2013 delivered by the Honorable Prime Minister, it was important to me that I endeavor to identify policies and programs therein that mirrored or were parallel to some of the very things that I took to the people during the campaign. That is the premise on which I will be judged as the MP. So I combed through the budget statement, and one of the things that struck me was that the current government had the wisdom to retain some of the social programs which have been of great benefit to the people of St. Lucia. So I say to the people of Miquid North, who have grown accustomed to the various programs offered by the NSDC, for example, that these will still be in force and that they should avail themselves of the opportunity. I say to the fisherfolk and the farmers that I see therein also initiatives that will enable them to not only revive or resuscitate the banana industry, but encourage them to consider other areas that they can go into. I say to my single mothers that albeit that I sit on the opposition benches, I am so glad to note that there is a policy in there called SMILES that to my mind will cater to the very needs that they brought to my attention. My task is very simply to ask of the government that in the implementation of SMILES, that my single mothers in Miquid North be not sidelined, that my single mothers in Miquid North be given the consideration due to them as citizens of St. Lucia. Mr. Speaker, I remain very concerned about the environment for doing business in St. Lucia. And while I listened intensely to the member for Groseley and her cocktail of policies that to her mind would turn around the way in which things are done so as to facilitate a better environment that is more conducive to doing business and more attractive to investors, I could not help but ask the question, would these be sufficient? Can we simply say that a cocktail of policies such as the TIPA and e-commerce and more speedy registration of companies would be adequate? Is there not more, Mr. Speaker, that is required? I have come to appreciate that doing business in St. Lucia can easily become a quagmire of sorts, and that perhaps much more needs to be done to streamline the various activities, the various mechanisms that facilitate the implementation of, or at least the conduct of investment in doing business in St. Lucia. I know it is no easy undertaking, but I trust that the able-bodied people in the government, in the Ministry of Commerce, will look beyond the mere paperwork and move speedily to implement the recommendations that have been made. We have waited with bated breath and very eagerly to hear the policies that will resuscitate this economy, given what the Prime Minister described as the comatose state of the economy. And his strategy read thus: a three-point plan for recovery, job creation, construction expansion, and fiscal consolidation. On the issue of job creation, I can't help it but notice, Mr. Speaker, that even as we make mention of steps, the very eloquent and rhetorical conversations that have thus taken place on equity somehow do not always apply in Miquid North. I ask, therefore, as has been admitted by the member for Souffre Forte-Jacques, and indeed my colleague to my left, the member for Anthony Canaries, that Anthony Canaries and Miquid North are indeed some of the poorest communities in St. Lucia. Why is it, therefore, I am sensing and I am hearing a special accommodation for the people of Anthony Canaries which to my mind does not translate. I have not heard an equal verb for the people of Mekong North. I ask if it is that according to the very scientific reports that have been generated, that Mekong North is among one of the poorest communities in this country, that due consideration be given to Mekong North in the way that ancillary canneries have been catered to under STEP. That would give life to all the notions of equity. Mr. Speaker, I note also that while there are certain numbers of jobs to be created under the various wonderful acronyms here, National Apprenticeship and Placement Program, Constituency Projects and Infrastructure Program, Small Business Targeted Assistance Program, these are all very welcome indeed, but again I raise a concern about the equity in the application and implementation of those. I'll be looking very closely and very intently to ensure that Mekong North gets its adequate share of these programs. However, I must say that as I looked at the Constituency Development Program in particular, and again, I applaud the government for continuing with a program which was started under the UWP administration, and that they saw the wisdom in that program, that we find the various mechanisms that will ensure that we can indeed continue to build capacity at the local level and empower our artisans, empower our unskilled or semi-skilled persons so that they can move up the socioeconomic stratum. Mr. Speaker, the Youth Agricultural Entrepreneurship Program is yet another program which, to my mind, will offer hope to the youngsters who have come to my office with proposals. They're as young as 17 and 18 years old. They've just left school, and already, Mr. Speaker, they have visions of starting their own businesses within the agricultural sector. This program, to my mind, will be a welcome initiative which I'm hoping that they can tap into, and I trust that they are listening. The youngsters who have just graduated from the Viewport Comprehensive School, even young teachers wanting to have a second form of employment, they came to me with proposals to do the various, to get into cut flowers, shrimp farming, etc. So I trust that this initiative can lend them that opportunity, and again, that there is equity in the application. As I have said before, the people of Mekong North must be wondering, why is it in ancillary canneries we have year-long STEP programs? The people of Margaret Tooth, Mr. Honorable Member for Sufre, would love to have something similar in Margaret Tooth, don't you think? Exactly. So, I ask, why not the people of Mekong North? Why not the people of Margaret Tooth, Mekong? Mr. Speaker, on the question of that, I think that there is some general understanding of the necessity of that. Perhaps the concerns may very well be with the issue of timing. Is the current economic climate conducive for the introduction of that? Are there sufficient safety nets? What are the shock absorption mechanisms that have been put in to safeguard the vulnerable, the poor, many of whom are single parents and the elderly? These are the questions, Mr. Speaker, that many St. Lucians toil over as they anticipate the implementation of that. Where are the safety nets? What measure of shock absorption is built into the policy and in the implementation of it so as to ensure that those who are already struggling won't sink further and further into despair of poverty? I am reminded of a little old man who visited my office a few months ago, and he said to me, "Rep, I want you to come and see where I live." I want to tell you, Mr. Speaker, that this man is not alone, that there are many of our St. Lucians who are forced to live in inadequate housing. I wish that there was something that jumped at me here to cater to those persons, because it is not when their houses are demolished by fire or storm or flood, but there are people who are in dire need of help to restore their physical infrastructure, their homes, so as to make them more suitable for habitation. What is in here for them, Mr. Speaker? I continue to look eagerly for something for those people with inadequate housing so that they too can have the benefit, or if I should say the privilege, of a proper roof over their heads and boards that don't sink under their feet. I want the fisher folk of Mifflin North to notice interest the fuel rebate for fishers, and to say to them that so very often when I engage with them, their myriad complaints, they tend to think fall on deaf ears. But my task is simply to say to them that I see here something for them, and I want them to avail themselves of the opportunity, albeit so little, but half a loaf, I guess, is better than none. Mr. Speaker, we all know of the difficulties of the banana industry, and Black Sigatoka is but just one of the many challenges confronting that sector. And while I appreciate on a very personal level the challenges of that sector, because I pride myself as a farm girl, having been born in an agricultural home and a farming family, that I understand this. I have first-hand experience. When I was a kid, I remembered leaf spot and what leaf spot did to our farmers. And this, I understand, is a variation. This Black Sigatoka is a variation of what we had earlier called leaf spot. Dearly. Mr. Speaker, I have had to listen to my farmers. I have had to listen to their cries. I have had to listen to them tell me of their shrinking incomes. I want to say to them that I am looking intently, and I stand ready to work hand in hand with them to help them move into other areas, other lucrative areas of farming. My father was a poultry farmer. My father was a pig farmer. He grew crops, tree crops and bananas. And I knew why he had to have these various things on the farm, because there was no telling which one would be more or less volatile given the disease of the day. And so I want to encourage my farmers to consider moving into other lucrative areas of farming. I will go further to say that my dear friend in the Ministry of Agriculture, the member for Viewport North, I trust, sir, that you stand ready to work along with my farmers, especially the young ones who are keen to move into rabbits and poultry or livestock generally and other kinds of farming. I trust that when I recommend them to you, that you'll receive them with a welcome arm or welcome arms. Don't forget the bonbon. Mr. Speaker, as I peruse the document on page 52, I noted with due interest the subsection increasing internet access. And that is an area that is very close to my heart for several reasons, but I will say here and now only that we have to be very cautious that access to the artifacts of information and communication technology does not automatically translate into their efficient use. We have to be careful that to equip persons with laptops and other forms of technology does not automatically translate into productive and efficient use of those machines or the application of those machines in the various business models that exist. So while one can appreciate the need to increase internet access, to do what? To go on Facebook, in the chat room? Or is it to empower oneself, to avail oneself of the many programs on there, the abundance of information on there, so as to empower oneself to move from being simply a standby end user, or to become actively engaged with technology, to one day become an uploader or even a producer of the technology itself. So while we look to make laptops available and to increase internet access, I fear that it's simply for entertainment purposes. There is a lot more to my mind that these artifacts of the new technologies can be used for well beyond mere entertainment. So I ask that the government be guided in their policy formulation, that we are not seen simply to be copying that which is being done in the North, but to think more deeply and more carefully about how best we can embrace those technologies, apply them to our various business models so as to increase our levels of efficiency and enhance productivity. I think that would be the better thinking with respect to increasing internet access and access to the various forms of technology and technological artifacts. The same concern goes with respect to the enhancement, the education enhancement through ICT programs. I have always wondered that why is it with 12.3 million euros, is it? Am I reading this correctly? Yes. By the EU in the amount of $12.3 million, that more schools should have been included in this program. May I dare say that at least a school from Meekhoek North should have been included in the program. That is an initial first step, an important first step, Mr. Speaker, in bridging the rural urban divide in the use of technology. If it is, we are to achieve universal access to technology, it is important that the rural communities too are brought into those programs so as to correct the technophobia, so as to correct the techno-illiteracy, so that they too can become active end users of the technology. I wonder whether an adjustment can be made here to include one of my schools or communities in Nikud North. Mr. Speaker, forgive me for mentioning yet again the notable absence of any statement on the Nikud Health Center. It concerns me not least because every weekday morning I see so many middle-aged and elderly people accessing what to my mind is a substandard facility. I can only trust that in her wisdom, the Minister for Health, responsible for health, and with the support of the Minister responsible for finance, that they will move speedily to correct that situation in Nikud North, and we too will soon have the benefits of a wellness center, a modern wellness center. Mr. Speaker, on the issue of sports, expanded support for sports. I know, as well as you do, Mr. Speaker, that many of our able-bodied sportsmen and women hail from south of the border. And given that the Minister of Sports himself hails from south of the border, that there will be an allocation of that money commensurate with the talent of the youngsters of the south. I trust that is how it will be spent. So given in Nikud North we have Gary Macre and Jeffrey Nutt, we should get a per capita amount perhaps for every national sports personality we produce. We should get a certain percentage of the allocation, the budgetary allocation. But this is to say that we have three main playing facilities in Nikud North, and I would not want to see them overgrown with grass, as happened recently, making them inaccessible. And I wish to thank you for your intervention on the last occasion, but there's a lot more to be done, and a lot more that we look forward to. Mr. Speaker, I made a very notable omission in the statement by the Honourable Prime Minister. And that is that I was unable to find therein any explicit pronouncement with respect to the foreign relations of this country. It struck me as rather curious because in his opening statement, he was careful to indicate that we are a small open economy, that we must define our relevance in this world, we must compete more than we ever have, create more than we ever have, and yet cooperate more earnestly than we ever have. That, to my mind, would have been a perfect platform to delve into the government's posture with respect to its external relations or foreign relations. And I combed through the document and found nothing. While I am well aware that the minister responsible for external affairs is yet to speak, to my mind, if it is not resident in the prime minister's pronouncement, one is left to assign a level of priority to it, which perhaps I would hate to think is unimportant. But Mr. Speaker, indeed, St. Lucia is a small open economy. Indeed, St. Lucia relies very heavily on its relations with friendly nations, development corporations, lending agencies, etc. And I can hardly wait for this government to tell the country what is its posture with respect to the foreign relations of this country. And let me go on further to say, it goes well beyond concerns regarding our relations with Taiwan. That is but one element of our foreign relations. One element. Is it, as has been stated in this very document, that even as the contours of the global political economy change, and even as there seems to be a reordering of countries in the international system, that the traditionally powerful are now being challenged by the new and emerging countries, such as the BRICS, which were mentioned in here, should there not have been a very explicit statement in here on how St. Lucia endeavors to engage with the new and emerging powers in the international community, such as Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, etc.? That, to my mind, would signal that due thought has been given to not only strengthening our traditional relations with our old friends, but also deepening relations within the existing regional bodies that we are members of, but most importantly, nurturing new relationships with the emerging powers in the international system. I remain a little concerned, Mr. Speaker, that there's a little silence on that score here. Mr. Speaker, let me say to this Honorable House that I understand all too well that it is relatively easy, relatively, I say, to compile a menu of well-meaning social and economic policies. But the challenge is always in the implementation. And while that menu, though it may be lacking in certain areas, has in it things that people who have long wanted some relief and somehow fell for the tantalizing promises in that red manifesto over there, I think it's very important. I think it's very important, Mr. Speaker, that we exercise due responsibility in the management of the affairs of this country and to indicate to the people of St. Lucia exactly what the state of play is, and to not entice them, to not create expectations that we know our economy cannot afford. And therefore, Mr. Speaker, I can hardly wait for next year when we will be in a position to judge all that is contained herein by way of programs and policies and to ask of the government, how did they fare? Mr. Speaker, another area that is very close to my heart is that of the creative industry. I recall last year in a previous life that some thought was being given to situating or repositioning the creative industries as a core pillar, core economic pillar, so as to steer this economy away from its dependence or over-reliance, rather, on bananas and tourism. And I must say that in my brief but very enlightening engagement with the members of that sector, several things came to mind. One, that they're not a homogeneous entity, that they're a very diverse group with many very, very varied wants. And that, of course, they are talented, and of course, they are aware of all the opportunities in the ether. I ask, do we have enough in here to help them multiply that talent, to help them convert that talent from what largely are hobbies into economic activity so they can sustain themselves and their families? I see that a creative industry commission would be set up. I see that there are consultancies to be undertaken. Mr. Speaker, that sector understands itself better than most. When I met with them already, they were engaged in all kinds of cultural mapping, self-definition, and they were already very much in tune with an activity that was taking place at the OECS level so as to give to them a blueprint to elevate the sector. So, Mr. Speaker, I issue this word of caution, if I may, that while we are excited about the creative industries, that we move very carefully and meticulously, and that due caution be exercised in creating wild excitement that we cannot satisfy in the immediate term. Mr. Speaker, I want to say that on this occasion, this being my first opportunity to comment in the lower house on this budget statement, that I would love to view it as some degree of optimism. And that optimism is derived from what I see in here as a social contract. A social contract which to my mind implies that the government understands all too well that it is the government for all St. Lucians and that it stands ready to deliver on the promises in here so that all St. Lucians can benefit. The courage to believe and to act is one of the subheadings that caught my attention. The courage to believe and to act requires that our political integrity guide much of what we say and do. Courage to believe and to act, to my mind, means that we will not always find ourselves trapped in the quagmire of parties and politics. the courage to act, the courage to believe. To my mind means that wherever you find yourself, if according to the scientific evidence that you are from a poor community, whether you find yourself in Anstruther, Canneries, or in Mikud, the government will do the right thing to attend to your needs. The courage to act, the courage to believe, and the social contract, notions of equity, all these things translate into an expectation that we should see an end to naked, vicious, partisan politics and the application, implementation of policy. That is what this signals to the people of St. Lucia. The courage to act, the courage to believe, the social contract, and notions of equity. Mr. Speaker, I am advised that when in opposition, I shall have a drink. Maybe that when opposition is better to drink and swallow hard. But let me say, Mr. Speaker, that I want to believe that we have come to a juncture in our politics where my people in Mikud North do not have to ask of me why is it they are not included in certain programs. I want to believe, Mr. Speaker, that the wisdom that my honorable members now in government would have acquired while in opposition would mean that they would have a greater sensitivity to the needs of all people. I want to believe, Mr. Speaker, that my colleagues in government understand that even in opposition, and even as people chose to exercise their democratic rights, and to elect members on this side as the representatives, that they should not and they will not be punished for so doing. A young lady came to me 2 weeks ago, and she said to me that she worked in the Last Step program, and she understands that there's another step forthcoming. Can she have the privilege of working in that STEP program as well? And I said to her, I am allowed only 25 of the 100 plus. And Mr. Speaker, she seemed surprised. Said, but you are the MP. Why is it you are allowed only 25 while the Labour people, as she put it, the labor operatives somehow have the privilege of hiring 75 and more people. Again, in the spirit of equity, I want for this lady and many other ladies who, by the way, are single parents to have the opportunity to have a greater bite at the, a larger bite at the economic pie being distributed in all constituencies. Mr. Speaker, I see here, coming from the Ministry of Commerce, plans to have an incubator, a business incubation for those who are interested in starting off and whose hands need to be held in the early stages. Mr. Speaker, I want to say that there are several young talented people in Mikud North who would love to access that service. And I shall send them very speedily to the Ministry of Commerce to receive the advice and the good counsel that they would require to set them off on a good path as they explore the entrepreneurial spirit.
Honourable Member, you have 15 minutes remaining to conclude your contribution.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I will end in the way that I started. I went to the people of Mikut North and I said to them, with my 14-point plan, can I please have your support? I know that I'll be judged by this, because as I said in my opening remarks, voters make very little distinction between an MP in government and an MP in opposition. And so, as I combed through this document, the budget statement, I looked wherever I could to find programs that mirrored some of the intentions that I had for my people of Mikut North. And where these exist, albeit still in rhetoric form, I have so alluded to them, and I have indicated to my people of Mikut North that as citizens of St. Lucia, as taxpayers, as people who belong to this beautiful country, that they too are entitled to tap into some of these programs. Where there were glaring omissions, I have highlighted those. And to reiterate, the one that bothers me the most is the resounding silence on an explicit pronouncement on the foreign policy posture of this country. Mr. Speaker, I thank you, and I'm obliged to thank again the people of Mikut North for this opportunity to be their guardian, to be their eyes, to be their ears in this honorable house. I know that in the tight fiscal space that we find ourselves, that much will be asked of me as an MP and much will be asked of the government. I ask my people of Mikut North to exercise due patience as I do my very best to access whatever is on offer on their behalf and to their benefit. I thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the people of Mikut North for entrusting their well-being to me. And I again wish to assure them that I will do all that I can do within my God-given ability to ensure that their livelihoods are bettered during my stint as their MP. I thank you.